Okay, so I want to delve in particularly into this culture of honor, because you see, when we go through change, it can either come from a place of obligation. Oh, I guess Simon says we ought to do this. I suppose we ought to. It's a bit inconvenient, you know, but all right then. We can do it from a place of obligation, or we can do it from a place of vision. We can do it from a place of this is who God has called us to be, a place of an inspiration from the inside. So let's just look at a little passage, Hebrews 2, verse 5. We'll spend a little time in this, and then we'll go out into other passages. But this is what the writer to the Hebrews says is this. What is man that you are mindful of him? Or the son of man that you care for him? You made him for a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor. What is man that you are mindful of him? Or the son of man that you care for him? You have made him for a little while lower than the angels. You have crowned him with glory and honor. The key point is this. God himself has given us honor. You see, the world starts from this vantage point. The world starts from the place of God owes me something. I'm important. I'm significant. God owes me something. It's like God owes us a living. God owes us our existence. And so when things go wrong or we get disappointed, we kind of shake our fist at God and say, hey, hang on, this wasn't the deal that I signed up for. I don't know about you. But we get this kind of approach to life. And that's what many self-help books start with. They start from you are significant because of you. But actually, notice the writer here starts from a totally different place. He says, what is man? Who am I that you, God, should take any notice of me? What is man? What is man? That's where he starts. Proverbs 18 says this, before destruction, a man's heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor. And the revelation is this, that when we want to come before God, we start from this place of, what am I? Who am I? I'm literally just a bag, 80% water. That's what I am. I'm a bag of water with a bit of dirt thrown in. That's what I am. I'm a bag of water with a bit of dirt thrown in. That is who I am. That's what the psalmist is saying. But, he says, what is man that God himself is mindful of me? He says, God, that's who I am. But God himself, he is mindful of me. Wow. Why should God be mindful of me? I'm just a speck. I'm just a gnat. I'm just a nothing in the universe. Why should God himself be mindful of me? And that word mindful means to think about, to remember. Why should God himself? This is how he starts. He starts from a place of humility. What is man? Who am I? That God himself should be mindful of me. He says, but wow, the revelation is he is. He is mindful of me. And he says, not more than that. He says, listen, he says he cares for me. Wow, that who am I? That's where he's starting, that God would be mindful of me and that he would care for me, that you would care for me. It just blows him away. You can read it in his words. And the word actually care there means loving care. It's not just a kind of benevolent care. It's a loving, tender care. I'm just a bag of water and a bit of dirt, but God himself cares for me. I don't have to puff myself up or make myself because of this, that, or the other. It's a recognition. I am nothing. I've got nothing to offer God, but God himself is mindful of me. Wow. Wow, you guys are just not happy enough, or you knew this already. I don't know. But there's something of this that when it gets in your heart, it starts to make you stop and realize, wow, this is amazing. I don't know if you've ever watched the Antiques Roadshow. I'm not a massive fan, I have to admit, but I've watched it now and again, and every show pretty much is the same. And what happens is someone brings in this piece of junk, and you as the audience are thinking, that is a piece of junk. It is a piece of junk. And they bring it in, you know, and they carry in this piece of junk. And you're thinking to yourself, and this is how it's meant to go. This is what you're meant to think. You're thinking to yourself, look, listen, don't waste the expert's time. It's a piece of junk. Just leave right now. It's going to be embarrassing for all of us. Chuck it in the bin on your way out. And just, you know, let's save my time and your time. It's a waste of time. You've got a piece of junk. Well, of course, they bring it to the expert. And the expert says, interesting. And they get their handkerchief out and they polish it up a little bit. And then they've got this little ceramic piece of junk. And they say, they said, you know what? This is very unique. This is a nose picker from the 17th century, as used by Louis XIV. A porcelain nose. Have you seen? Did you know? A porcelain nose picker from the 17th century. And you know what? It's the only, because Louis had two, and the other one got broken. And where did you find this? And they said, well, I bought it from a car boot sale for 50p. Really? Did you know this is worth £500,000? This nose picker. And the audience, you're like, I knew it. I knew it. I knew that thing. You see, I'm actually a bit of an expert in ceramic nose pickers from the 17th century, and I knew it was worth something. See, that's the journey. Pretty much every show saves you time watching it. That's every show. It works pretty much like that, except it's not just about nose pickers. And the point is this. This is the revelation that the writer to the Hebrews has. He says, listen, you guys, us, we, with a bit of junk in the back of the drawer, in the loft, covered in fluff and dirt. And the world says, you're worthless. And the world says, you're just a bag of dirt mixed with water. And you were brought to the experts of all experts. And he took one look and said, this one has got value. This one is significant. This is where the nose picker analogy breaks down a little bit. This one has a purpose and a destiny. God himself defines your value. He has honored you. It says, crowned you with honor. He says, for a little while, you've been created lower than the angels, these magnificent beings. But one day, Scripture says, we will judge the angels. For a short time, we are lower than the angels, but one day we'll judge the angels. He said, and now you have, God himself has crowned you with value. And what it does when we get hold of this is it recognizes, helps us recognize that the lies that we have been told are just that. You have been told, we have been told, you're insignificant, you're worthless. You've got no, I mean, I remember praying with a lady just recently. She was told by her teachers, you'll never amount to anything. That's what she was told. That's what she believed. And the Spirit of God came on her as we prayed, and she wept as she realized, it's a lie. It's a lie. The lies get snapped off of us when we start to realize the honor that God himself, I don't have to puff myself up. I don't have to make myself better. I don't have to self-improve. God himself in my filth, in my dirt, in my sin, in my shame, he is the one who looked through it all and says, this one has got value. This one is precious to me. It breaks us free from the lies, and it also breaks us free from the questions. So many, particularly guys, but many of us, live with the questions of, am I going to amount to anything? Is my life going to count? Has my life got any purpose? When you realize that God himself honors you. The word honor means this. It means to recognize the value of, to respect, to acknowledge the worth, and to act accordingly. This is why Christ came. If you're not a Christian here tonight and you've never understood, why did Jesus come? Why did he die? This is the reason. Because while we were still sinners, Christ came and died for us. He saw our value. He pulled us out of the dirt and said, this one belongs to me. This one is mine. And it breaks the lies off. It breaks the questions off our spirits. No longer have we got to prove anything. We start from a place of security. Instead of rampant striving, and it changes the way we live. This is the foundation of the culture of honor, that God himself has given us honor. What is the fruit of this revelation of the honor of God? Well, there's a few things very quickly. Firstly, it releases the life of heaven onto earth. If you look in Exodus verse chapter 20, we'll skip around the Bible a little bit tonight. It says this, honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. There's something about honor that releases life. When we choose to honor, when we choose to give honor as God has honored us, something of the life of heaven gets released onto earth. We're not sure how it exactly works, but there's something about it that when the flow of honor begins to happen, life is released instead of death. Heaven's environment is honor. It's built and founded on honor because that's who God is. That God is a trinity, a triune being filled with honor. Honor from the Father to the Son and the Spirit. Honor from the Spirit to the Son and the Father. It's like this triune relationship of honor, not preferring one another, caring, committed to one another. There's this relationship and we get invited into that. And so when we partner with that, we invite heaven's economy onto earth and heaven's life onto earth. And so when we gossip and backbite and tear each other apart and pick out the worst and think the worst of each other, when we create that, I used to have a teacher at school, and when he wanted to get the class silent, what he'd do is he'd go to the blackboard at the front, and they had blackboards in those days, he'd go to the blackboard at the front and he'd put his nails on the blackboard and he would go, and it literally would send a I can still hear the noise now because it would send a shudder down my spine as he would do it like that. But that is what gossip and backbiting and tearing one another apart is like to God. It is so alien. It's like, oh man, that's a nasty sound. That's how it appears to God. And so when we reject that stuff and say, no, I'm going to choose to honor. I'm going to choose to think the best. I'm going to choose to bless. That doesn't mean we don't ever challenge. It doesn't mean we don't ever bring to people to account. But what it means is that our hearts flow wherever we can, in whatever way we can, out of honor. When we do that, we start to partner with heaven. And notice this in Luke 11, a prayer that we've prayed many times, kind of the foundational prayer that Jesus taught his disciples was this. When you pray, he said, Father, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Some of us have prayed that prayer hundreds of times. Hallowed be your name. Hallowed be your name. And some of us have never known what it means. What does it mean? Hallowed be your name. Why have they kept that word hallowed in there? Because it's such a difficult word to translate into English. And what it means is this. It means be honored as holy. It means let your name be considered the most important, most holy, most special name there is available. Hallowed be your name. So the prayer is all about honor. It's saying, God, we want earth to reflect the honor that you've given us. Honored be your name. You have honored us. You have honored mankind. You have honored each one of us. So we want your name to be honored. We want you to be honored. We want you to be the one who is given honored as holy, as special, as significant. But notice what follows immediately after it. Hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Honor and the kingdom of God breaking in are intrinsically linked together. One follows the other. When we create an atmosphere of honor, when we create an atmosphere of relationship of honor between us and God, it creates this symphony in heaven. That means heaven's culture just starts to invade. That's why you see in a place of honor, in communities of honor, people's relationships get restored. People's friendships and communities get put back together again. In a place of where we honor God in worship, healing flows. Breakthrough flows. That's why it works this way, is because honor is like the air of heaven and we step into it. And there's something about stepping into that reality. That's why often in Scripture you'll read the words glory and honor together. Whenever you see honor, often you'll see glory. Because honor, again, is linked with God's glory. The very glory in Scripture represents the manifest presence of God. God here amongst us, the God who's everywhere, turning up somewhere. So when we honor one another and when we honor God, his glory comes. His glory comes amongst us and we start to see the things that only God can do. And the second thing that honor does, just quickly going through them, is this. It produces an incredible internal security which removes the need to promote myself. When I'm living out of a culture and a heart that has understood the honor that God has put on me, it produces incredible internal security. Luke 14, Jesus says this to his disciples. When you're invited to a meal, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you'll be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. There's something about a culture of honor that recognizes that I no longer have to push myself forward. So much of our lives, isn't it, about pressing ourselves forward, about making the opportunity, getting this deal, getting that, getting the best this and that for me. Whereas in that, when we've understood the honor that God has poured into us, what it means is that we no longer have to worry about that stuff. And Jesus says, so much so, you don't have to worry where you sit in a place of honor. You can sit wherever, you can sit, go for the lowest place. And then the host will come and move you up into a place of more significant honor. And some of us are thinking, yeah, but what if he doesn't? What if that doesn't happen, Jesus? I don't want to sit down there at the kind of the dreggy end of the table. I want to be up with the important people. And Jesus said, well, the thing is, the reality is this. Even if you aren't moved up, you don't mind. Because your significance is no longer in your position and who you're with. And you've no longer got to keep up with the Joneses and meet this person and hook up with that person and have that one as a friend on Facebook and Twitter with that person and retweet the person, the comment from that person. You haven't got to worry about all of that stuff spinning around and what does this person think and that person think. And oh, I said this and how many people liked it. And all of this stuff just stops. It just stops. Because suddenly you realize that God of the universe says that I am valuable. Wow. So that means then, I mean, you know, I like you and all, but really, your opinion? It's not so really weighty anymore. I mean, you know, I'd like you to like me, but really, in comparison to the God of the universe saying that I'm valuable, if you don't think I'm so valuable, well, you know, okay, we can talk, but God of the universe has pressed the like button on your eternal Facebook page, and suddenly you don't care who else presses the like button or how many of them are there, because you can think there could be 10,000, but your likes are not like his like. It changes your thinking. You don't have to worry about this stuff anymore. It doesn't mean you have to disengage, but you equally don't get caught up with the rat race of life, because suddenly you get an internal security. I remember going to a job, you know, I felt the Lord had told me to come and work for the church, go part-time for the church. And I was staying 4 days with me, going part-time. And I remember my boss, who was one of the people I respected most in the world, and he said to me, Simon, this is career suicide. And at first I wobbled a bit, and then I thought to myself, no, hang on a minute. If God himself says this is not career suicide, in fact, if he says that there may be a path here for me, he will make a way for me, then hand me the gun. I'll pull the trigger myself. You know, that's the reality, is suddenly his opinion, and I valued him, I respected him, but suddenly I thought, hang on a minute, I've got to do what God's told me to do. Gives you an internal security. Thirdly, it produces a willingness to serve others in the public and the private place. Matthew 23, Jesus talking about the Pharisees, the religious rulers of the day, said this, they do all their deeds to be seen by others. They love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the synagogue. Proverbs 14, verse 31 says this, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him, meaning honors God. So what it's saying is this, when I get and understand this honor, when I've understood how God has honored me, what it does is I suddenly get a revelation that I just want to give this stuff away. If God sees me, that I'm just a bag of water with a bit of dirt thrown in, and yet he says I'm valuable, then I can honor all of those around me because he has given me honor. It just starts to flow out of you. Suddenly, you don't mind about who sees what you've done or this that you've done or that you've done because your desire, your heart becomes just to serve and to give away what you've been given because God has put his stamp of value on you. Suddenly, it just begins to flow out of you. And you don't mind. In fact, God says, you know what? When you particularly care for the needy and the poor, then because you don't get often very much recognition, because not many people are going there, because not many people are going to see that and think, oh, look at them. Because of that, he says, when you do that, you honor me. When you serve anyone, you honor God. But particularly when you serve the poor, you honor God. He says, you, and it's like, becomes like this. You know, when you put a microphone next to a speaker, I won't do it because I headache and all that. But you know, when you put a microphone next to a speaker, you get this feedback, don't you? And it just like goes very quickly, you get massive volume. get deafened by it. And that's what happens when we live in this atmosphere, when we live from a heart of understand our honor. It's like the honor of God pours into us, and we then pour it out to those around us, and God says, well, that just comes back up to me. So we start to realize, well, hang on, when I honor someone else, I am actually honoring God. And it's like becomes this feedback loop that just goes round and round, magnified and magnified, gets bigger. And then, of course, that motivates them to honor others. And the whole thing just becomes this eternal kind of orchestra, symphony of honor. That is how God designed the planet to work. We've broken that because we refuse to honor. But God has designed it to be like this, where honor is flowing from one to another to another. This is what he's calling us to. This is the place that we're called to create. And the last thing is this, it produces a culture of honor. When enough people in a community get hold of this revelation, get hold of this truth, it's no longer just me and you. The feedback loop stops getting broken because suddenly the whole thing starts to flow together. It starts to resonate. People start to notice the difference when they come into it. So many other things we could talk about honor, but let's just land with this one. 1 Peter 2, verse 17 says this, honor everyone. Peter was a very blunt fisherman, and he finishes it well. Honor everyone. Go on, guys, just honor everyone. Romans 12 said this, love one another with a brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Outdo one another in showing honor. Some of you were born with a competitive spirit. You were born with it. Anyone here played Monopoly to the point where your spouse or a friend has said, I think actually we're starting to upset the guests at this point, you know? You know, I know you want to win and you're keen and it was exciting at the beginning, but suddenly when you're pounding us into the ground, people are starting to cry. They want to go home. They're hating this. Yeah, but I haven't got all of the board yet. Yeah, I know, but it's not, you know, you live your life, you don't want to just finish well at Pictionary. You want to crush people. You want them not to just know that you're the best drawer in the room. You want them to realize that they can't draw at all. In fact, you want them to never want to hold a pen again. This is like that kind of competitive spirit gets going. Maybe this is just me. I don't know. But that kind of competitive spirit gets going. Well, look, the scripture's not saying to get rid of that. It's saying this. Transfer that, redirect that into the realm of honor. Imagine a community where that kind of competitive spirit that's actually in all of us, maybe not for board games, but for other things. That kind of competitive spirit gets transferred to the realm of honor, where we have a holy competition to out-honor one another, to show honor, to show respect. This is not saying we don't ever challenge. This is not saying that we don't ever bring. In fact, honoring someone often can involve challenge. It means that we love them too much to let them carry on the way that they're living because they're too good to live this way. So often it does involve challenge, but what it means is we create this atmosphere, this culture of honor amongst us. So how does this affect us as a community? What's this got to do with going to multiple meetings and all these changes? Ah, I thought you'd never ask. Well, what it means is this. When we go into this next season, we can either do it, you know, from the heart of, well, it's a bit of a pain, really, isn't it? You know, we can either go to multiple Sunday meetings with a spirit of, oh, this is a bit of a pain. All right, if we have to, it's a bit inconvenient. You know, I'd rather not have a little kind of break in this kind of meeting and the 9:30 to 11:30 thing. Oh, dear, you know, I prefer, you know. We can go in with that spirit. You know, it's just not that convenient for me, but all right, if we have to. We can go in with that. Or we can go in with a spirit that says, do you know what? I have received such significance and value from God. I want to do anything we can to allow more people to come in and encounter him. I want God to be honored above everybody else, above everything else so much that I would do whatever it takes. Change whatever if we think it's going to help us. Create an atmosphere where God is honored. Then I'll pay the price. I'll sacrifice. I'll serve. I'll do what it takes. And we can go into it with that spirit. Because we recognize that we've got to get into this mindset that God is doing a big thing. And some inconvenience for us is okay. If it means that the honor feedback loop, the place, the atmosphere, the encounter that others can have, we make more space for others. We can go in with that. And the other thing it will change is our willingness to serve in whatever way we can to facilitate others. It will transform our approach to community as we get hold of this. We create a culture of this. You know, for me, do you know what? If I'm living not out of a culture of honor, what I want really is I want to roll up to church just before the meeting starts. I don't want to get there early and bother to talk to anyone. What I'd like to do is get there right as the meeting starts. I'd like to park right outside the doors there. I don't want to have to walk. Other people go a bit closer. Now, I'd rather park right outside the doors. I'd rather want to walk in. I want the room to be nicely tidied from whatever happened yesterday. What I want really is someone to give me a bulletin that they've folded. I don't really want to bother folding stuff, or, you know, it's menial. I don't want to do that. So someone else has got to fold it and stood there for a while and handed it and shook me warmly by the hand, looked me in the eye and wished me a welcome. And I'd love someone to put a coffee in my hand, which they've prepared. I don't really want to get here early and prepare it. I'd rather somebody else did that. And I didn't make enough coffees at home. And so I'd rather somebody else had made me a coffee, and I can drink my coffee in peace, talking to a few people if I like, but if I don't, I just won't talk to anyone. And then what I'd like to do is come in here. I'd like to sit down. I'd like someone to show me to my seat. I'd like the room to be tidy. I'd like someone else to do that as well, actually, because I hoover at home, so why should I do that at church? I'd like to come, and I'd like to sit in a seat, and then I'd like to worship God. I'd like the band to come and practice. I'd like them to have practiced. I'd like them to have got here early and practiced. But I'd like them to have practiced and lead me in a rousing time of worship. I'd like to really enjoy that and led into the presence of God. I really would rather that other people kind of kept their noise themselves, so I could focus my own journey. And then I'd love a few announcements, but keep them tight because I've got things to do. And then I'd like a preach which entertained me and engaged me and taught me, but also that challenged me, not too much, but just challenged me just enough to feel that I'd felt good about my challenging preach. And then what I'd like at the end is someone else to come and pray for me and to minister to me because of my needs. And then ideally, I'd like to just go home whenever I fancied it and really just let someone else clear the building up after me. That's what I'd like to do. Anyone else like that? I want to join a church like that. Awesome. Awesome. We can either approach, yeah, sign here. We can either approach this like that, which, to be honest, if we're all honest, is what we all really want, or we can say, do you know what? God has so honored me and so poured his life out for me and so given me significance. I just want to serve others. I wouldn't be content to live like that, because the God of the universe has said when I serve others, it honors him. And so I just want to give it away. I want to give it away, particularly to those that have never encountered this before. I want to make sure that someone else makes their drink and clears the room up for them. I want to make sure that they come in. I want to understand and recognize that every handshake given, every coffee handed out, every prayer prayed, every child looked after, every time that something like that, every car parked, every room tidied, every chair put straight, every worship song practiced, every single element of this is part of us serving one another and honoring God. And it just changes our mindset. It changes our mindset if we'll approach it like that. And we'll say, do you know what? I am willing to serve. I am willing to serve, to give myself to this together. Because I'm not a consumer anymore. I'm part of a family. And we're on a mission. And our mission is to honor our great King and to honor one another, and to let the honor loop, feedback loop of heaven get as loud as it possibly can, so that people come in and just say, wow, see how they serve one another. See how they love one another. See how they welcome one another. See how they love God. Wow. You know, for too long, the world has come into the church and they've seen the same gossip, the same backbiting, the same tearing apart. And so many have just walked straight up. Because that's what they get all the time. What's different about that? I'm believing God for a church and for churches and for community and communities that look so different from that. Where people literally come in and encounter the atmosphere of heaven. The honor of heaven amongst us. It's not going to be perfect. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to have to get up and pick ourselves up and have another go. But to counter that atmosphere as best as we possibly can, that's what we're after. So we've got a huge adventure ahead of us, guys. It's going to be fun. It's going to be painful. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be exciting. All of those things. And I want us as a community just to get ready for that. And do you know what? It's interesting. I was reading just this week about in the Second World War, the average, the sign-up age was 17 for the soldiers. And in the States alone, they had 200,000 under 17-year-olds sign up. In fact, the youngest person to win a Purple Heart for saving other soldiers' lives was 12. 12 years old. Now, this isn't any reference to child soldiers or the rightness or wrongness of that. But the spirit of those kids was this, and they interviewed me, and his spirit was this. He said, I cannot see my brothers and my cousins go off to fight without me. I want to be with them. I want to stand with them. And so he got the Purple Heart at 12 years old. When they found out how old he was, they kicked him out of the Navy. But not before he'd won the Purple Heart for his sacrifice for his country. Amazing, amazing. And that was their spirit. They would serve and even break the law to serve. And I'm believing God for a church like that. That we would step up to the plate.